You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Corporations in Our Heads is a new project that investigates how the messages from corporations have colonized our individual and collective psyche. An evening of popular theater asks how these messages affect our relationships with each other, with ourselves, and with our planet. The program has been touring across the province and to Alberta by Vancouver's longtime popular theater company, Theater for Living. The evening is described as theater without a net. No actors, no play, no script, just us here. Corporations in Our Heads will make its closing run in Vancouver next week. And I'm joined by David Diamond, who's Artistic Director of Theatre for Living and Joker for Corporations in Our Head. Good morning, David.
Hi, Lorraine.
Now, the technique you use originated with Augusto Boal's Cops in Our Heads. Tell us about that technique and how you've adapted it.
Yeah, okay. Just for your listeners to understand before I do that, they will have known this company as Headlines Theatre for the last 33 years. We're going through a slow name change to Theatre for Living, just so people understand, you know, what's happening. Yes, Augusto Boal, the founder of the Theatre of the Oppressed, was a very dear friend. And we worked together in various parts of the world over the years. I just want to say I miss him a lot. Cops in the Head recognizes that all of us have voices that we listen to in our consciousness that come from other people in our lives, close relationships in our lives, that give us messages and advice that stop us from living healthy lives. An example I'll give you is a person would never really say to themselves, David, for God's sakes, David, you're so stupid. Why are you so stupid? That isn't my own voice. That would be the voice of a parent, a teacher, a sibling, somebody, over not just one instance, but many years, saying this to a person, and it gets embedded inside you, and then something happens, and you hear that voice, and you trick yourself into thinking it's yourself, and it affects your life in really negative ways. Boal understood this from a psychological level and developed a theatrical technique to humanize those voices on the stage as characters. Other people come to play those voices that we take out of the storyteller's head. And then using interactive forum theater, work on those voices one at a time as a community to find ways to, in the Theater of the Oppressed terms, break the oppression of the voices.
What's the process that leads up to the selection of a story for each performance of Corporation in Our Heads? How does the story emerge from the audience?
I do, you know, we gather and I explain a little bit about what we're going to do. And we actually then do a very short, fun, physical warm-up because I want them to understand the level of engagement that we're looking for at both a physical and an emotional level. And then I ask if for three people who are willing to offer stories out of their own lives, when they had to make a decision about something, and in that decision-making moment, they know that the voices, the messages of corporations are in their head, giving them advice that they know is unhealthy for them. And this has been prefaced with a back-and-forth dialogue with the audience about, A, what a corporation is to them. Different people will have different ideas about that. And also, what messages in their own lives are unhealthy for them. And again, that changes everywhere, place to place. So we've already started a conversation. Stories come. The room chooses the story that resonates the most with the audience. And then from then on, we are focusing to that one person's story. Having said that, the event isn't a psychoanalysis of the storyteller. I've adapted this technique dramatically so that the audience actually is in much deeper control of how things evolve than they are in Boal's Cops in the Head. In Boal's Cops in the Head, all the power rests with the storyteller. And in what in the adaptation into Corporations in Our Heads, the storyteller gives us a gift that then the room owns, and the room has much more control over developing how the evening unfolds.
Now, you've been touring this in really diverse settings for about 2 months. Were there particular themes that you started to see different audiences raising? Like, were there similarities in themes? Was everything different everywhere you went?
Yeah, you know, there have been some themes. In Vancouver, this larger urban center, we're dealing more with issues of body image, and food, and consuming. Whereas as we got up into the north in BC, we got into things that were much more clearly around the pipeline and industry and that balance that we have to find between our responsibilities to clean air and water and the fact that, you know, we live in a culture where we have to have money to buy food and shelter, you know, I'm speaking in generalities, you know, here, because it's not, there aren't completely defined lines, geographic lines like that, but generally that's been the case. There have been other stories that have like been anomalies, if you know what I mean. So in Leduc, in Alberta, the story that came up, and it was the only time a story like this happened, was about the very, very early sexualization of children and how parents are frozen inside that story. Like, what do you do when your 8-year-old is being sexualized by corporate messaging? How do you navigate that? And that was a very, very powerful evening, and the only time that that kind of story has come so far.
What's your role, David, as the host, or I think you call yourself the joker in that situation?
In terms of the term joker, think that does come from Boal. Think wild card in a deck of cards.
Yeah,
you know, that it's not the court jester, you know what I mean? It's that person in the room who has the permission to do whatever seems necessary in the moment, within reason, to animate the event. So I'm a theater director. I'm making invitations to participate. I'm asking questions. Sometimes the role is to kind of poke at the community, if you know what I mean. Like, because it's possible from on stage to interpret things. So there is a certain kind of silence that happens in the theater sometimes, where you know that something very deep has just happened. And if you can sit in that moment and feed it back and go, how many of us, for instance, recognize this silence here right now? Lots of hands will go up. You know, it's a very challenging silence. What is this about? And people start to say, it made me think about this, it made me think about that. And so you're always, you're the person who's navigating the dialogue.
Do you, in that role, I imagine that role carries a lot of power and a lot of responsibility. Do you have certain ethics that you, or certain principles that you make sure that you stay within as the joker in that situation?
Yeah. Of course, you know, something that's one thing that's very important for people to understand is that while the work is completely audience participatory, you know, there really is no play, there really are no actors, there really is no script. Nobody is dragged onto or coerced onto the stage. The guiding principle for me is nobody should get embarrassed doing this. And there are lots of different ways that can happen. the space needs to be created in which it's okay for us to disagree. And that means that there isn't a political agenda to the event. That means that there must be space for voices with which we disagree to feel safe and be heard. Otherwise, having an authentic dialogue is utterly impossible. And I try to protect that principle very strongly, because I think it's the only way to create safe space. You know, and there are perspectives that come up that aren't my perspective. You know, I'm like everybody else. I have my own political perspective. But the space has to be made to have an actual dialogue about stuff. And in order for that to happen, everybody's viewpoint has to be honored.
Take us briefly through one of the stories that was adopted by an audience. I'm particularly interested in hearing about some of the communities up north that might have First Nations people who are facing the pipeline situations now. And also there's a lot of, as you mentioned, different points of view in that community.
You know, one of the things that happened up north is that and this speaks to the symbolism of the event, is a story came, a young woman at a computer. She hates her computer. It's an old computer. And she wants a new computer. To the point where she's prepared, because the computer works fine, to actually smash the computer up so that she can get a new computer. But she's also really against the pipeline. And she recognizes that the desire for a new computer and new stuff in general is one of the things that feeds the story that we're told that necessitates more and more oil and gas exploration and production, that our desires aren't separate from the industry, the growth of the industry. And so this is a very interesting, rich moment. And so there's an exploration then about the corporate messages that are telling her to consume more, that it's okay to just enter the competition, you know, that many of us fall into, to have the same as or more than the people around us. And because the event is all about relationships, you know, one of the things that happens inside the event is we brand the messages. You know, people come to play the messages, and then we have to turn them into characters. And so one of the first things that happens is we understand what the brand is. So, for instance, the brand might be Enbridge, okay? Or sometimes the brand has been the federal government brand. But the person playing the character can't play Enbridge. You just get a caricature. And so what I've realized early on doing this, and people have found this very, very helpful and powerful in their lives, why do some messages stick to us more than others? Because we attach real relationships in our lives, human relationships, to those messages. And so we also figure out what the human relationship is. So let's say for the sake of, I can't remember what the details are in the story, but for the sake of this conversation, that it's Enbridge and Dad. Because the person can play Dad, the person can't play Enbridge. We know it's Enbridge. But we also start to look at how Enbridge is functioning like the parent who says, look, I know what's best for you. Or the federal government is functioning like the parent that says, look, children, I know what's best for you. And in the theater, we can deal with trying to alter the relationship. You know, part of the invitation in this event isn't to try to shut up the corporate messaging. I would suggest that's a waste of our time. They're just going to keep communicating with us. So asking an audience member to silence the messaging is futile. But asking us to change our relationship to the messaging is doable and can transform our lives and the communities we live in. And so people are doing that. They're recognizing that the kind of messaging that's coming, for instance, is embedded in a relationship with a teacher, with a mother, with an uncle, with the best friend you had who you always got in trouble with, you know, who was so much fun to be with but really got you in a lot of trouble. And so in the midst of that, a man stands up in this community and says, you know, it's really interesting to me. We're talking about relationships, and I think that's exactly what we should be doing. But let's also understand that we are in a relationship with water. That he says, you know, lots of people say we have a right to clean water. He said, I don't agree. I don't think we have a right to clean water. We're in a relationship with water. It makes up 78% of our bodies. And because we're in a relationship with that water, we have responsibilities to that water, like in any other relationship that we're in, for generations to come. And this really made the room quiet. Because if we understand that, and I think he's right, and you know, he put something in a way I'd never thought about it before, but he's right, then the way we do everything actually has to change, regardless of what side of the argument we fall on, whether it's, look, we need the jobs, or the short-term jobs aren't worth the possible environmental degradation. The conversation changes, and it came out of this investigation of relationship. That was a very long answer. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's fine. And I because I'm trying to understand. I know that that Theater for Living wants the project Corporation in Our Heads to go beyond just raising awareness of these internalized voices of corporations to what you describe as transformative action. Is that automatic? Are there mechanisms that you have in there? Or does it happen every night? How does it move from just a sense of awareness to that?
It's not something you can control. And I've been doing this kind of work long enough to know that if the evening adds up to somebody going, okay, so here's the conclusions that we've come to this evening. Here's how to solve this problem tonight. That if you do that, if you're really, really lucky, that's going to be relevant to 10% of the audience. And the other 90% of the audience is going to walk out going, well, that was really interesting, but the solution that they came up with doesn't apply to me. Rather than do that, I finish off this evening with asking people if there's anything concrete that they are taking out of this evening that they feel like they can use in their relationship to corporate messaging. And people say lots of different things. And so what people get to hear is lots of different insights that people have had inside the event. And I'm doing it that way because there's a man named Fritjof Capra. He's a physicist. Many years ago wrote The Tao of Physics, The Turning Point. And he was really the first one to start popularizing systems theory. And I'm pleased to say Capra became a friend. He wrote the foreword for my book. And his work affected my work very profoundly. I got trapped, I think as many people do, in my own activism, trying to change the structures that I think oppress us. And I was in constant failure mode because nothing I did changed the structure. Now, it's interesting, Paulo Freire, who people will know, I think, writes really eloquently in The Pedagogy of the Oppressed, that, you know, people fight revolutions, it's happened throughout history, they win those revolutions, only to become the very things they were fighting against, having won the revolution. You know, we all know that happens. Why? Why does it happen? Well, I believe that one of the reasons it happens, Fritjof Capra understands, because in his work, he looks at how patterns of behavior create structure, not the other way around. And so nature, in fact, teaches us that this is true. And so in our activism, when we work to change the structure and we neglect the patterns of behavior that created the structure, we're doomed to recreate the very same structures all over again. So, you know, I know a lot of people doing really good work on structural change. It's not that that isn't necessary. Of course it is. But the theater is actually really good at human behavior. And so more and more of my own work, and these events in particular, are focused on helping us change our behavioral patterns, in this case with corporate messaging. Changing those patterns will support real structural change, because it is our patterns of behavior that create the structures. Those structures didn't just drop out of outer space to imprison us. We built them, each and every one of those structures. So, and so there are questions throughout the evening. People have insights. They talk about some of those insights, and they leave the theater. And I don't think you can know what the result of that is. And trying to know what the result of it is will, in some ways, stop it from happening, because you're gonna shut down. You're going to shut that process down. Yeah. Am I making sense to you?
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, David, it's been really good talking with you this morning, and we're going to invite people to actually have the opportunity to experiment with and explore some of those voices in their heads, corporations in their heads, on your final run next week.
Can I just say, just because this ends up sounding really kind of political and heavy, but it's actually, people are laughing a lot during this event. It's a lot of fun to do. And I just want to kind of put that out there, because it's not a grim and determined evening. It's actually a lot of people are having a great time doing this.
Sounds awesome. Thanks again for joining me this morning.
Okay, thank you.
Bye now.
Yeah, bye-bye.
I've been speaking with David Diamond. He's the artistic director of Theater for Living, formerly Headlines Theater, and the Joker for Corporations in Our Heads. And the shows are on next week from December the 4th to December the 8th. And the venues for next week include Gordon Neighborhood House, Gallery Gachet, Vancouver Aboriginal Friendship Center, the SFU Harbour Center, and Café du Soleil. All the events start at 7 p.m. with a suggested donation of $10, but nobody will be turned away due to lack of funds. For more information for that, about the shows, and to find the exact times for each venue, you can go to headlinestheatre.com, or you can phone 604-871-0508.